Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
I really appreciate you letting me come over your house and doing this recording. This podcast, because it's really special. You know, we've been following you and I say we as a collective group of people, we've been following you for a very long time, and the shit you put out is like fucking hilarious. So
thanks
for allowing me to do this, man.
I'm glad to be doing this.
I understand that you grew up in Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What brought your family to Chicago?
Fuck, hold on. What brought my family to Chicago? I think that's just where they ended up first after the refugee camp, you know? I can't remember the details right now of why it was Chicago. Hold on. Oh yeah, I know they did. I know there was a whole bunch of people that ended up in California, but I know that they didn't want to end up in California because they were scared of earthquakes. Yeah, I know, what the fuck, right? Because the snowstorms in Chicago is like way worse. Yeah. Taking the tornadoes and all that shit. There's all types of shit in Chicago.
Yeah.
It gets super hot and it gets super cold over there.
And you were born in Chicago.
Yeah, I was born in Chicago.
And then you as you're growing up in Chicago, it was pretty normal existence for you?
No, I don't think it was that normal, because I was always the only Vietnamese person, you know? Like, during that time when I was growing up as a kid, nobody knew what a Vietnamese person was from where I went to school. You know, it was everybody knew everybody as just like Chinese or whatever, you know, because we're the minority over there. It's not like OC where a lot of people are Vietnamese or Asian. But in Chicago, we were always the minority, or where I went to school. Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a rough neighborhood?
Yeah, it was in the beginning. In uptown Chicago, I felt like it was a rough neighborhood. But once my dad started making more bread, then we moved to the suburbs. Yeah.
And tell me about, like, why was a rough neighborhood? Why was a rough time?
It's just dangerous over there, man. You know,
is
like,
it?
Yeah, I felt like it was. I felt like it wasn't the safest place, you know?
It's got one of, like, the highest murder rates in the world.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I mean, I never seen it in person or anything like that.
Yeah.
But just growing up, I felt like I got bullied a lot, you know, at school. And I felt like everybody was picking on me for being Asian. So I dealt with a lot of racism growing up, like ching, ching, chong, and people flipping their eyes up and stuff like that. And I remember getting to a fight in first grade, it was, because they were doing that shit. And then I was trying to fight back, but I was so little. I was so small compared to them. And I remember swinging. I couldn't hit nobody. And then we had recess in the parking lot. And I remember this one kid, I just remember he just kept taking my head and bashing it into a car trunk over and over again. And I kept trying to like swing at him, but I was so little and my arms were so short, like I couldn't reach, you know? But I remember it wasn't always bad, but then there was a lot of bad shit that happened like that, you know?
And did you go home and tell your mom and dad about it?
Oh yeah, I remember there was this one time I got beat up by two kids. Actually, I was cool with one of them. And I don't know if he was like going out for acceptance for his other friend, because his other friend was another black kid that just came, and they I felt like they became close. But I was friends with one of them first. And then one day, they just both started bullying me. And I was friends with one of them. I was like, what the fuck? Why is he being so mean to me? And then they just both started like slapping me and punching me during recess. And then and I couldn't take on both of them at the same time, you know? I just remember them just hitting me over and over again. And then I remember I had two black eyes. And then I tried to tell my dad about it, and I remember I was crying, and then he didn't take it seriously at all. I probably Vietnamese dad. He didn't show any kind of empathy or anything like that. And I remember I was at his work, and then he was just really busy with his customers and work. And then I was trying to really get his attention about what happened. But from what I remember, if I remember that memory, it didn't seem like he cared too much, you know? Yeah.
And do you think because of that, looking back, that that has something to do with, like, from that point on, sort of like acting out or, you know, any of the crazy shit that you
Oh, yeah. Into? I think I had a lot of anger issues growing up because a lot of that was those feelings were suppressed, you know, and then not being able to be heard by your, you know, your parents. They're always busy working all the time. And then on top of that, my dad was super abusive. You know, he started beating me, I think, when I was like 3 years old. Yeah, like sometimes I wouldn't even know what I did wrong.
Yeah, it's typical Vietnamese he would back just, in those days.
Yeah, he would just come home from work sometimes angry. And I remember like hearing his footsteps, I would get scared because I wasn't sure if he was going to be in a good mood or a bad mood. Because when he was in a bad mood, like he had a really short fuse. He'll sometimes start like breaking shit in the house, start hitting us, and sometimes hit us. We don't know why he's hitting us, you know? But he was really, really strict, really wanted me and my sister to study and just focus really hard on school. But the thing is, he was always at work, so he was never there to really like guide us or anything like that. He kind of just like hoped to come home and expect us to be a certain way, you know? Like, I remember, like, all right, we're talking about all this trauma now.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's cool, cool. I remember, man, he came home, my mom, okay, I think this was when my mom had a day off from work, and this is the day that she was able to watch us. And I remember he came home from work, and she's like, oh, go, you know, look at, you know, study, pretend you're studying, da-da-da. And then I remember I had the book out, and he just sat down next to me, and I could hear it, like, all like his footsteps and everything, and I could tell like he was in like an aggressive mood. I could feel his energy. And then he takes the book from me. He's like, "What is a sale?" You know? And I'm like, and then he starts fucking. Well, it's funny to me now. He'll start like poking me in the head with a pen. Like, "What is a sale?" And I'm like, "Gong bik." And he starts slapping the shit out of me. And then
how old were you?
Learning about a sale. I don't know how was it. Was this like
8th grade or some shit?
No, it was before that. But I just remember I was young, and I remember he said that, like, oh, if I come back and you don't know what a cell is, I'm gonna hit you again. So he came back, and I didn't know, because there was so much pressure. I remember my heart was beating really fast, and I remember I was trying to memorize the definition for cell over and over again. But you know, when you're so anxious, I was like reading it over, like, cell, da 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 da, cell, da da da. But then when he came back, I couldn't remember it. And then he'll start hitting me again. That's how he disciplined me. And like, that's why it was hard for me to learn shit, because I always felt this pressure, you know? So even at school, I felt like I couldn't focus. I think that had a lot to do with that. Yeah, I know. I think maybe because he didn't really have a good childhood either. But I didn't find that out until later in life about his childhood. Yeah. I know he had a pretty fucked up childhood.
But that's like normal in Vietnamese culture in Vietnam back in the days, the way our parents grew up, you know?
Yeah.
Many times they were like abused themselves.
Yeah.
But in that culture, it doesn't feel like abuse because everybody's getting their ass.
Yeah, out. Yeah. And especially they just came during that time, and they're all stressed out, and they all had to work, and, you know, they came to America and started with nothing, you know? So... Damn, that was a crazy time though. He was super abusive during that time. I remember I hated him so much. Yeah.
And it's like weird for all the audience who have been in that position, or parents who are treating their children like that. It's almost like we don't realize the kind of hell that we're living in at that moment.
Yeah.
Right? Both as the person who's getting beat and the person who's beating.
Yeah, man. Like, yeah, he was really angry during that time, man.
And from that point on, I think your behavior starts to transform into, right? Because you're not a normal person after that, right? With that trauma.
No, I wasn't a normal kid, because I remember when I would get report cards, and this is when I was young enough where they didn't give you A's and B's yet. They just gave you a report on your behavior.
Yeah.
And it was always like... everything for me was disruptive, very disruptive, very disruptive. I think because when I was at school, I don't know, I was really like hyper, and I just wanted to have fun.
Yeah.
Like school to me, I just wanted to laugh, have fun, fuck around. And I was scared to go. And every time it was time to go home, I was scared to go home because I knew it was such a stressful environment. Yeah. And I think at a very young age, I developed some kind of mental issues.
Yeah.
Like I was paranoid. Everywhere I went, I remember as a kid, I thought everybody was staring at me. Like, and I would freak out. Like when we were in like big social, like at a restaurant or something, I always tell my mom, like, oh, you know, stuff like that all the time. I was like looking around, like all scared and paranoid for like the longest time. And then it like stayed with me. Shit, honestly, until now, I still feel it, but I've gotten so much better at not ignoring it, but accepting it. Yeah, but as a kid, it was really, that paranoia was really strong. And to me now, looking back, I think it has a lot to do with getting hit for something I didn't do anything wrong. So that's why I always felt like I did something wrong, even when I didn't do anything wrong. I always felt like I was doing something wrong. It's that emotion of feeling like I did something wrong, even though I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. So that, I felt like that's the reason why I was the way I, like, that's what stuck with me. Yeah.
And as you're going up and going through high school and stuff, you're probably not, obviously not dealing with any of this trauma. And yeah, how does that affect you as you're going through high school?
Man, well, I didn't really have a real high school life because you skipped the middle school part.
Let's get to the middle school.
Okay. The middle school part. Yeah, I definitely had some crazy anger issues. I remember, I can't really remember that much. I just remember that the teacher had to pull me out of class a bunch of times because I would snap. Yeah, like I would get angry and then they'd have to make me sit outside until I calmed down. But I don't know what I got mad about. I can't remember.
Yeah, but that all comes from trauma,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know that now. Now that I'm an adult, yeah. So, yeah, definitely had anger issues.
Yeah, so middle school, you're experiencing like getting pulled out and...
Yeah, and then I was getting bullied and dealing with racism too. And I remember there was this one kid, I think he was saying some ching ching chong shit to me too. And the next day I brought a knife to school. And then I got in trouble with having a knife because I think I threatened him. And then he told the principal and the principal told the superintendent. And then the superintendent pulled me in and they found it on me. Yeah. So then I got in-school suspension for that. And then I remember during that time, I think it was seventh grade, that's when I, those other Asian kids at school, and I kind of like grouped up with them and so that we could kind of create our own kind of group. You know what I mean?
Basically a gang.
Yeah, not really, you know, kind of like a little crew, yeah, you know? Yeah. But it, because we got together, it kind of made us like the cooler Asians, you know what I'm saying? Because I felt like during that time, there was a lot of like nerdy Asians in my generation, yeah, yeah, or they were getting picked on, or like, but then I kind of created a group for us to be together and identify, like, and it just made us more tough. You know, we're cool, we dress different, we're, you know, I cared a lot about my image during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with like not wanting anybody, like white people or whatever, to look down on me. Yeah.
And when people at that time looked at you and the crew, you know, the kids, were they sort of falling in line with like this idea of strength in numbers?
Maybe. Like? They definitely just didn't look down on us because that was during that time I got really into hip hop. I really got into breakdancing. And then so I would be breakdancing at school, dances and stuff like that, and like listening to a lot of like different music. And a lot of this influence, though, has a lot to do with my sister. My sister was a huge influence on me because I felt like in her generation, she was getting picked on a lot when we moved to this new neighborhood. And then she was kind of teaching me how to deal with it before it would start happening.
Like what would she teach you? What were the things?
It's kind of funny to bring up right now. So,
Hit first, talk later? I mean, what is...
Nah, I don't know if I should talk. So...
You don't have to go exactly, but I mean, like, just basics, right?
So she was... When she first moved to the neighborhood, a lot of girls were picking on her because she was, like, a confident Asian girl. And I don't think they were used to that. They're used to, like, nerdy, quiet, you know, but my sister's kind of a cool... But then, I don't know, I felt like those girls were jealous of her, so then they kind of... looked down at her and were picking on her, and they start like making shit up about her, and kind of racist too. So my sister, being an older sister, she was teaching me every single racial slur to say to a white person, so that the first white person to like say something like bad to me, I had like five things to say right away. You know what I mean? I don't want to say those things, you know,
but
I'm like, oh, you, if they're like, oh, you ching ching chong, I'm like, oh, you did. I knew what to say right away.
You had the gun.
Like, yeah. And then every time I did that, they stopped messing with me.
So yeah. It worked.
Yeah, it did work, yeah. You know? And then also like during that time, she kind of started trying to find where she identified herself with. And then she started kind of hanging out with more Asians too and kind of creating her own thing. And then she had a huge influence on, influenced me to dress a certain way too. And she got me into music, actually, she was a huge reason why I got into breakdancing too. Yeah. But I guess that's what made me cooler, you know, when I got into all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to your sister, right?
Yeah.
Are you guys close today?
Oh, we're really close. Yeah. I mean, we fought a lot growing up, but probably because, you know, we were both getting our ass beat all the time. So we had all these anger issues. So whenever we were left alone together, we'd always be like super cool, super close. Or we start like fighting, like fist fighting and shit.
Yeah, that's typical. I have a son and daughter. They're like 18 months apart. So they're like that too.
Yeah.
And when you finally got into high school, did it get worse?
Oh, it did get worse because my parents moved away again. Okay, we moved to another area, so I couldn't go to high school with my friends from grade school. So I had to start over again. And then my dad, being angry and strict and all that, he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna send you to an all boys school." So I went to an all boys Catholic high school my first year of high school. And let me tell you, like the demographic there. That Asian, barely any Asians. Most of the kids there were Italian and Irish. And I dealt with a shit ton of racism over there. And I got into like 3 or 4 fights because of racism over there. And so every time I was at school, I felt like I had to put on this angry face and act crazy because I was smaller too, just so they would leave me alone, you know? But even though I'm naturally not like a crazy, angry person on the inside, I'm actually really nice, you know, real funny. But I felt like I had to always have my guard up, you know, I felt like I had to make them think that I was psycho, you know? So that's kind of what helped me get through that first year, you know, but every time I came home from school, I was always like real angry, real sad that like my dad made me, you know, go to a school like that. But, the second year, they were getting advice from my uncle. My uncle's like, "Yeah, just let him go to public school, you know, let him, you know." Then I was like, "Yeah, I want to go to public school." And then the second year I got to go to public school, oh man, that's when there was more Asians, more everything, not just mostly white people, you know what I'm saying? It was like Filipinos, Middle Eastern, you know what I'm saying, Koreans, like
more minorities.
Yeah, you know, and then I didn't have to dress in uniform, and then also co-ed too. But then because of that, I had too much fun. That's when I got into like smoking weed, like drinking and other stuff at a young age. And then I was just kind of like wilding out. Like I got hooked on hanging out with friends. It was to the point where like sometimes after school, I wouldn't come home. I just hang out after school, go smoke weed. And my parents had a curfew for me, but then I stopped listening to the curfew. They wanted me home at like 8 p.m., you know? And then I just wouldn't come home sometimes. And then it got to the point where my mom would be sitting on the stairs waiting for me, crying, like worried about me, you know? But I just didn't want to be at home. I just didn't want to be around my dad, you know? Cause it was just always drama, you know what I mean? And I didn't feel comfortable at home, you know? So I got hooked on just hanging out with my friends. And that's when I felt like family was friends. Yeah. And then, me and my dad were really not getting along during that time.
Didn't he beat your ass for coming home late at that point, or no?
So he stopped beating me. I think it was like around eighth grade, because I remember I was going through puberty, and I started getting, you know, a little taller, voice got deeper and stuff. And I remember he was smacking the shit out of me, and I remember I grabbed both of his arms, and I was like, "You really want to keep hitting me? I'm your only son, you know." Son in Vietnamese, you know. And then I think after that, he kind of changed a little bit. I remember after that, he was sitting on the stairs and he was just like angry. But then like, I think he had all these emotions. He just didn't know how to deal with it. And then when I was in high school, we'd argue a lot, but he would never like try to hit me. He would just yell at me a lot and I'd yell back. And it was just like, we just had a really, really bad relationship. And then that's when he started threatening to send me away. I didn't think he was actually going to send me away. We went on a Vietnam trip, like a family trip. And my dad wanted me to stay longer in Vietnam while the rest of the family went back to America. And so it was just me and my dad in Da Nang. And then we went to Quang Ngai. That's where my dad's from. My dad was actually planning to leave me there, like leave me in the countryside. That was his plan. I didn't know that at the time. I thought he just wanted me to like, you know, visit family and stuff like that. But that didn't work out. And let me tell you why. I ended up meeting my cousins that's not my cousins. And they took me out drinking like every night. And I got wasted. And so then that's when he was probably like, "Oh, man, maybe it's a bad idea if I leave him in Vietnam, right?" And then I remember we went back to Saigon after Da Nang. And I met this random American guy in the lobby when I was on the computer, like in the hotel. And he's like, hey, you from the States? He was 22. I was 15 at that time. And then he's like, oh, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm from Chicago. You know, he's like, hey, man, you should let me, I should take you, let me take you out sometime. You know, I was like, yeah, but you got to ask my dad. He's like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, and then he has a conversation with my dad and he's like, yeah, I'm a computer engineer, blah, blah, blah. So this guy takes me out and to the club and we get bottle service. I'm 15 years old. And I remember like, there was like a group of girls next to us and the table next to us. And they're like, oh, and my toy. I was like, oh, my tam toy. I was only fucking 15 though. And then I remember I was still a virgin and everything too. And he's like, yeah, let's go karaoke with them after. And I'm like, no, it's okay. He's like, oh, that's because you're so young, blah, 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 blah. You're fucking scared. I'm like, no, can you just drop me back off at the hotel? And so he drops me off back at the hotel. I think he went to go karaoke with those girls or whatever. And I remember I came home, came back to the hotel. My dad opened the door. He's like, gong ro, huh? And then my face was all red. And I'm young. And I'm like, no, gong, beef food poisoning. And then I was throwing up all night, bro, because I was so wasted. And I think after that, he's like, nah, I'm not going to fucking leave in fucking Vietnam, bro. Like, fuck that.
So that was it.
Yeah, that was it. We came back. And then he was still talking about trying to send me away. So we went on a tour in Wisconsin at this military school. So I was like, oh, fuck, I might end up going to military school. But
so he was serious?
Yeah. And then I remember I was thinking like, okay, if he tries to do this, I'm going to run away, you know? And I already had that in my mind. And then I think I was home for like, I don't know, I think it was like 2 or 3 months. And then one morning, I'll never forget this. 5:30 in the morning, my dad comes in my room and he's like, oh, these people are here to take you. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? So then these two tall white guys come in with handcuffs. And I'm like, the fuck? And they're like, they're like, oh, we're here to take you to a school. I'm like, what? I'm so confused. I'm like, oh, these are probably tour guides because I didn't even pack my stuff yet. Like, why would I be leaving right now, right? So I get up, I get dressed in the bathroom, and then I get out, and I'm just real confused. They're like, I follow them to the car. I get in the car. I'm like, oh, can I go back inside the house and like get all my clothes and stuff and like pack, you know, or whatever? No, sorry. This is before they told me I was gonna be. They told me actually I was gonna be gone for 3 months, right? And I was like, wait, what? Like, yeah, you're gonna be gone for 3 months. I'm like, where am I going? They're like, oh, San Diego. I don't really at that time. I didn't know how far San Diego was. I knew it was in California, but I didn't know exactly where. You know, because I'm from Chicago. And I'm like, oh, can I go back inside and like get my clothes and pack it? And in my head, I'm like, oh, should I run away? You know, blah, yeah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, all your stuff is already packed already. Your parents packed it for you. And I'm like, what the fuck? So then I'm like, oh, can I talk to my parents? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what the fuck? What do you mean no? Like my house is right here. We're parked right outside. And then all of a sudden I see my mom coming out and she's crying. And then my dad comes out too, and he's trying to hold my mom back. He's like, no, not ID, you know? And I'm like, what? Like, what? Where am I, you know? And I'm like so confused, you know? And then like, my dad was like, you have to go, you know? And then I tried to open the door. It was like child seat locks. I couldn't open it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Were you cuffed at the time?
No, I wasn't cuffed though. Cause I cooperated, you know? I think for the people that don't cooperate, yeah, they get, cuff you, yeah, right? And then after that, I just started crying, man. Like, I just started getting, like, tears coming out. I was like, what the fuck? Like I couldn't even get to say, I really wanted to say bye to my friends because they were, like, my family during that time. I couldn't call anybody that time. And then I'm asking them more questions about this school. And then they're like, oh, yeah, you know, it's by the beach. You know, you play volleyball and all this stuff like that. But I'm still not, like, excited at all because I'm getting sent away to somewhere really far. And I want to be home. I want to be where my friends are. At that time, my friends are everything to me. And then, anyways, I just remember we're on the way to the airport and then they pop the trunk and there's this big box. I guess that's where all my stuff is at. And I remember thinking like, fuck, should I run away? You know, should I run? Should I make a run for it? But then I was too scared to run, you know? I ended up getting on the plane with them. Before I got on the plane, I begged them for me to like use the payphone to call my friends, say bye, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I called some of my close friends. I said bye to them. And they're like, what the fuck? Where are you? You're like, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting sent away. I was like, oh, I'll probably be back in 3 months. And then I was trying to call my mom and dad. I was trying to convince them, like, okay, like, I promise I'll be good, you know, I'll listen to you, I'll do anything, you know. I was begging them over the phone, like, no, you have to go, you know. Then I'm like, oh, well, how long, like, can I come home after, like, 2 weeks, you know? Like, no, you have to go. I'm like, and I was like, how about one month, you know? And then my dad was like, oh, I'll think about it, you know? I didn't know that was going to turn into 21 months, right? So I remember we got to the airport. I'm just in a daze right now. I can't believe I'm going to this place or wherever the fuck I'm going. I can't believe this is even happening to me, you know? It just happened out of nowhere. I woke up one morning and now I'm getting sent away. What the fuck? And then, I think, yeah, we get to San Diego, and then I fell asleep in the car. Because, I felt like I was just trying to sleep because I just didn't want to be awake to see all this shit that's happening. And then when I woke up, we're in front of this gate, this big red gate, and then these, giant walls. Concrete walls. I think it's San Diego. Okay, I think that we're still in San Diego. I fell asleep. We get there. These gates open up. Car drives in. I see a bunch of kids, like guys, shaved heads, uniform, waiting in line. Like, I'm like, what the fuck is this, military school or something? And then we get in there, and everybody's speaking Spanish. And I'm like, wow, this must be like a very Mexican, you know, part of San Diego, right? So that's the first thing that came to my head. And then when we got in there, the staff made me strip down to my boxers, you know, to see if I brought anything in or whatever. And that was already uncomfortable as like a 16-year-old, you know. And then I can't remember too much about it right now, but they assigned me to one person who was going to teach me all the rules of this school or whatever, this program. So he's the only one I'm allowed to talk to. And they told me he's the only person I'm allowed to talk to. And then I remember asking him, like, hey, man, like, what kind of school is this? And he was like, this isn't a school. I'm like, what do you mean it's not? I was like so confused. And he was like, this is a behavior modification program. And I put together what that means. You know, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know? And I'm like, oh, yeah. So well, we're in San Diego right now. And he starts laughing. He's like, nah, man, you're in Mexico. I fucking fell asleep when they crossed the border and ended up in Ensenada. And I was at a behavior modification program in Ensenada. I just flew from fucking Chicago. And you see my face. I was like, what the fuck? Where the fuck? What am I doing here? I'm like, wait, what? I had so many questions, you know? And then he ended up teaching me everything about that program and what I had to do in order to go home. I had to go through a level system in order to go home. There was all these rules. He was saying like, oh, you're going to start at level one and you have to follow these rules. And then you're going to move up to level two, get more points, move up to level three, level four, level five, level six, you go home. So he's teaching me all this shit. And I'm just shocked that I'm in Mexico. I didn't even know where Ensenada was. And then he showed me on a map where we were. And I'm like, holy fuck, I'm far as fuck away from home. Like, damn.
And they only spoke Spanish there?
All the kids were most of the kids were American, but all the staff were Mexican. And then we were required to learn a little bit of Spanish, you know? Like, the staff would speak to us in Spanish and English, yeah. But, we needed permission to do everything. If I needed to use the bathroom without going as a group because they put us in these things called families. If I wanted to go to the bathroom without the family, I'd have to ask for permission to talk first, and after that, ask for permission to go to the bathroom. So I'd be like, oh, señor, para permiso para hablar, you know, to talk, and then señor, para permiso para usar baño. You know, it means like, oh, can I get permission to talk? Can I get permission to go to the bathroom? You know, sometimes they say no, sometimes they say yeah. And then I found out that it was very strict rules. Like, I couldn't sit down without crossing my legs. I wasn't allowed to look out the window. If I was going to talk to somebody, I needed permission to talk. We only had a few times in a day we were allowed to talk to other students, quote-unquote students, other kids in the program.
Were there academics that you have to study?
There was, yeah. It was kind of homeschool, but it was a joke, man. It was you could finish each course in 2 weeks and you don't learn shit. But then when you pass it, it makes it seem like you're doing well in there, you're focused, and they send that to your parents to make it look like you're doing well in school or whatever, you know? And then each family has a case manager, and their job basically is to convince your parents to keep you there longer. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, so they're making money.
Yeah, man. It's a business. And It's, man, this is such a long story. I'm gonna try like shorten it a little bit. They made us go through these like brainwash seminars. There was the first one was called Discovery, and they pretty much put you in this big room, and they have a facilitator, and he basically breaks you down emotionally and kind of builds you back up to this perfect character.
It's
whatever.
Kind of like Landmark, right?
I've heard about Landmark, but this is way more intense. Like, we had to like sit like this with our hands out every time they were talking. And they made us go through do these weird processes, but they were really intense. I remember, so much happened in those seminars, bro. I can't even.
How many of them were there?
So you have to go through, okay, accountability, discovery, focus, accountability, keys to success. You have to pass four of them, and then in order to move up in levels. Yeah, in order to get to level three, I think you need to finish two of them. But let me tell you a little bit about what they do in there, though. I remember all the lights were off, and then everybody's in like an emotional, like vulnerable state. Yeah. Because they had already like got you to like think about the child abuse and or everything that you've been through. And I remember they put this towel taped up in duct tape next to you, and then they're like whispering on a microphone while the lights are off in this room, and they make you pick it up and then beat the floor with it, and then basically, they have you let all your anger out on anybody who's ever bullied you, family members. And then it kind of leads to the point where it goes to, now who do you really hate? And everybody is in the room screaming, myself! And then everybody starts beating the floor with the fucking towels and crying and shit. And then after that, they start playing soft music. And then they make you kind of like get into fetal position like a child. And they're trying to get you, they call it like getting in touch with your magical child so they can build you back up. Dude, that's crazy, bro. Like, and that's just one process.
Okay, but
that shit's fucking nuts, bro.
I got 1,000 questions.
I bet. Fuck, bro. That shit was crazy. That shit was fucking crazy, bro.
But my first question is this. Do you think these experiences during that time in Ensenada has been a good effect on, that has had a good effect on your life?
Good and bad.
How bad? Like what bad?
Cause so much happened in there, and cause they built me to be this like robot. When I first got out of that place, I definitely wasn't normal. I felt like I wasn't in touch with my emotions anymore. I felt like anytime I felt angry or anytime I felt a negative feeling, I would like convince myself to turn it off like a robot without actually feeling the emotions. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And I was just observing everything all the time and reading people, but I felt like a machine. It was like good and it was bad. Like I felt like I wasn't a human anymore. And that place, because of that, I ended up kind of just, because I didn't feel human, I didn't feel emotions anymore. I felt like a straight up robot. I wanted to feel something. I wanted to feel alive again. I didn't feel alive when I got out. I felt like everything was a movie. I felt like I wasn't even here, you know? I felt like I was just like a walking like corpse vessel machine thing that they created me, yeah. And so I started getting fucked up a lot. I started partying a lot. I was drinking a lot, doing drugs. Like
once you got out?
Yeah, I was, you know, I just wanted to like feel something, you know? Like, and I think drinking, like, I felt like I was having fun, you know, like, and also, you know, being gone that long, it kind of suppressed me because I couldn't do anything, you know, so I wilded out and I was taking a lot of risks, you know, yeah.
Wait, so you got out because you aged out or?
I finished the program. My parents wouldn't pull me out of there.
But so wait, were you 18 already by the time?
I was almost 18.
Oh, okay, because I imagine they can't keep you past 18, right?
No, they can't. You can choose out, yeah. So I followed
but
all
you
the...
you can't choose out before you're 18.
No, you can't. I followed all the rules. I finished all the seminars. But yeah, because I went through all of it, it did fuck me up. It changed me. And a lot of the things, the ways that it changed me, I mean, I didn't like. I just didn't feel like I was human anymore after that.
And did you make friends in there?
Like, oh, I did.
Close friends?
Yeah, I made some friends in there.
But if you're not allowed to talk to anybody,
when you move up in the levels, you get more privileges. Oh. Yeah. But honestly, bro, that place made a lot of us crazy. And I'll just give you an example. One of my buddies, did you hear about that kid, that threw his mother over
the parking lot or something parking structure.
So he was one of my best friends in there.
Vietnamese kid, right?
Yeah, Andrew. And that place really fucked him up, man. And he got schizo from that place, and then like shit like that. Like, and that's not like the first kind of crazy story I hear about like what happens to people when they get out, you know? I'm just happy I'm somewhat normal from all that. Yeah. But that place really affected
him. Is it still around?
So they're still around, man. They just, from what I heard, they just open up with different names. I know like Paris Hilton's been
one of them
like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, Netflix docuseries about these type of places. But yeah, man, it's a lot, man. It's a lot to talk about. Like, I just gave you one example of the processes we went through in one of the seminars, but they made us go through processes all day. It was a 3-day seminar. And imagine like, they're just constantly emotionally breaking you down.
Yeah,
you
know? I've been through Landmark. Yeah, I've been through Forum in the Advance. So it sounds, and I've heard people go through Discovery on the outside, not in an institution.
Yeah, so they make your parents go through the seminars too, the Discovery on the outside. And I heard that the ones your parents go through, they're a lot softer. Yeah, they're a lot nicer. But the ones that the kids go through, it's a lot more very intense, you know? And because my parents went through those seminars, they didn't want to pull me out. They thought that if I didn't graduate this program, that I would come home and like die. Like if I didn't finish this program, they felt like I needed this program. If I like they manipulated my parents to believe that like this is the answer. Like if he doesn't graduate this program, if he graduates this program, he'll have a much higher chance of doing well in life.
But I mean, let's argue that right now. Let's argue that.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we understand the bad shit that came of the experiences, but I mean, today, arguably, you're kind of in line and you're doing shit
It took a while to get here though, man. I went through a lot of fucking bad shit after that experience though, you know?
Oh, so your life got worse than...
Yeah. Right when I got out, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. Things started turning around until I was like, fuck man, 27? You know, and I got out of that place when I was like almost 18, you know? So I was really lost for a long time.
Wait, how old did you say you were?
Huh?
Oh, you said... we don't need to go back there. I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
When I think about today, the present moment, and your relationship with your parents, can you tell me how you actually worked through all this stuff at this point?
Yeah, man. It took a lot, bro. Like, I'm fortunate that my dad realized that he fucked up too, you know? That took a lot, you know? I think...
Well, when did it happen? When did he go, hey, I fucked up? Like, was there an admission of guilt here?
I think, you know, because after I got out, he kicked me out. And then after I got out, he also kicked my sister out. He was still very angry and he wasn't changing. And I think he kicked me out because I remember I came home from Mexico and we were having dinner. And during that time, I wasn't even trying to be angry. I wasn't trying to, like, hold any resentment towards him. I just wanted to... you know, us to be a family, you know, like, okay, like, just let everything go. But then I think we were having dinner. Yeah, we were having dinner, and he got into an argument with my sister. He got up. He looked like he was about to hit my sister. And then I remember I couldn't help but to snap. I was like, you know, you expect me to change. You put me through all this, and you haven't even changed yourself. And then he argued with me. He's like, I'll send you back. I was like, oh, you want to send me back, you know? I was like, you want to send me back? He's like, yeah, I can send you back. You know, I was like, I'm leaving. So I think I was only out for like 2 weeks, packed up a suitcase full of stuff. And I was living at different people's houses for a while, like couch surfing for a bit. And then, but honestly, that was fun to me because I had been locked up in this place for such a long time that like just being able to do whatever I wanted and being at my friend's house. And it was so fun to me, you know, I was having a great time. And then, what happened after that? I think my mom was like begging him to like take me back. And then, so he's like, okay, because the holidays were coming up. And then, so we came back, but then we stopped getting along again. And then he kicked me out again. And then I had an ex-girlfriend at the time. I ended up living with her and her family for, I think like 4 months or something like that. And then that was a really toxic relationship. And that was like a whole nother trauma I went through. But after that, I remember I was working 2 jobs, 7 days a week. I was working for a temp agency Monday through Friday. Saturday and Sunday, I was working at this place called White Hen Pantry, which is like a 7-Eleven. So I was working a lot, man. And it was really tiring, you know? Oh, I skipped a whole part where I was like working on a truck delivering like drywall.
Man, this shit is crazy because we haven't even gotten into like close to like SupDoc and how that's
evolved.
Which I don't mind. I mean, we could just keep going, but this is, you know.
I definitely been through a lot, man.
I mean, and do you share this with the public? I mean, do you talk about it often?
I haven't yet. This is my first time sharing about this. Yeah. But I feel like it's important because I feel like we all go through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, maybe it can inspire. I feel like maybe this can inspire other people who feel stuck to follow something that they're passionate about. You know, I've always been pushed to do something that I didn't want to do, you know, and I've worked jobs that I've really hated, you know. But honestly, SupDoc changed my life. SupDoc changed my life. And it's crazy because it was something that was already there. And if I believed in myself at the time and followed through with it and believed that this could be my future one day, which is my humor. You know, I've always been kind of a funny person ever since I was a little kid. I always joke around. But I think that has a lot to do with the trauma that I've been through too.
You know about comedians, right?
Yeah, the best
comedians are the ones that go through what you've gone through.
Yeah, like whenever, like my favorite time was hanging out with my friends and just fucking shooting the shit and joking around. Yeah. I always loved joking around. I hated drama. I always wanted to have fun. You know, I'm always about having fun, making other people laugh, making sure everybody's having a good time. Like, I've always been that way. I always want to bring people together too, so that we can all have a good time. And I've always like been imitating people ever since I was a little kid, like imitating accents and stuff like that. So I've always kind of been that way. So little did I know that was what was preparing me for the future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I do want to go back to your dad and your relationship because I want to know what, you know, I mean, it's like this is a struggle for me sometimes because I can lean into the next 2 to 9 hours talking about the family dynamics because that kind of stuff really interests me, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously the SupDoc journey is very important. Obviously, that's why we're here. But I do want to kind of like understand this piece of, because I know now today that you're really good and close with your dad.
Uh-huh.
And I want to understand that transformation and I want to hear about that.
I could be a little vague about it. Okay, so basically I got into a little trouble and I was looking at a lot of time or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think when I went through that, that's when my dad realized, oh shit, I might not have that much time with my son.
So wait, let me backtrack here. So you come out of this Ensenada ordeal and you are wilding out and you're like having a crazy time and something happens in your life and you're looking at doing some time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that's when you and your dad sort of like got together.
Yeah. And then before that situation happened, I was working, you know, 2 jobs, 7 days a week and just trying to survive without the help of my parents. You know what I'm saying? And I think because he wasn't there for me during that time and I was forced to, you know, I had to make my own money, you know, I had to do what I had to do. And then when that happened, I think he kind of had a regret. Maybe he was too hard on me. Maybe he was being too angry. And then I think when he realized that maybe I might not have that much time with my son, that, you know, so after that, he's like, he did everything in his power to try to save my life. You know what I mean?
And you witnessed that.
Yeah. And then in a way he did, you know, and then we got closer. And ever since then, he didn't change completely, but he had a realization. He felt like, fuck, how am I so good at everything else in life? My dad's really successful. How am I so good at business? But why am I so bad at being a father? You know,
And did he ever say that to you in those words?
He didn't say that until like, I think like last year. You know what I'm saying? And the dude is like 80 now, 80 something now.
Your dad's 80 something?
Yeah. My dad's a lot older than me. So growing up with a dad from that generation,
you know, that makes sense. He's not like, some 40, 50 year old dad at the time.
No.
But were you, I mean, did he have a previous family?
No, he didn't.
He just got married
late. Yeah, he's got married late. Yeah, and my mom's like 11 years younger than him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I grew up with his trauma from his generation, him during the war, going through what he had to go through during World War. And also my dad's dad got killed when my dad was like 5. So my dad didn't have a father, you know? All he had was like an older brother, older sister, but then from what he told me, and I didn't learn about this until recently, like his older brother used to beat him up all the time too. And he just grew up with a lot of anger, a lot of trauma, didn't have a father figure, you know? So coming to America with nothing, having to start over, and then raising these American born kids, you know, it's like, it's a lot of clashing with culture and generation and PTSD, you know?
Yeah. So once he starts to get involved with you and trying to resolve all this, you know, scary, dark times where he might be losing you for a long time, what starts to happen after that?
I'm trying to remember. Well, I also had a strong desire to be better. You know what I mean? I did graduate college, and then
What did you study?
I was just, because they, I think they just wanted me to get any degree during that time. I just did business management, and then minor in psychology, and I got my bachelor's degree. You know, and then you know, I worked really hard for it, but I hated school. You know, but then I remember I was trying to get a job, but I couldn't get a job because of some things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then my uncle from Iowa came and offered me a job. He's like, hey, why don't you come move to Iowa and then work for me doing tech support? I was like, in my mind, I was like, I'll take anything. You know what I mean? I just want work experience. I just need something on my resume. I just need someone to accept me, you know? And so I did that for like 2 years. And then I started doing that remotely, even when I decided to move to California too. Yeah, and when I came out, I'm trying to think, revert back to, so me and my dad, we because, you know, because I had a direction too. I think he worried a little bit less. And then, we just started slowly just getting cooler. You know what I mean? He still had a temper, but also my dad's getting older. So he started just
slowing down
because he's just getting old. And also in my mind too, I'm like, you know, my dad's getting old, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like I kind of let go a lot of stuff too. My sister, it's harder for her to forgive for what my dad did back in the day. But I don't know, for me, I don't know, it's a little easier for me to forgive him. Even though like he did put me, my mom, and my sister through a lot of shit, I just felt like, man, life's short.
Do you ever apologize?
He didn't like say I'm sorry. But he
shows it.
He showed it. You know, he showed it. And you could tell as I got older, I started understanding him more and asking more questions about his life. Now I like understand why he's the way he is. And I started to have empathy and sympathy for what he went through. Like, I felt like he's such a good person on the inside, but because of what he went through, it like he gets triggered easily to be a certain way. Like, he has crazy trust issues. He had crazy anger issues. And because he just got fucked over a lot, you know what I mean? And lost a lot of things, and a lot of bad things happened to him. And that's what, and it just sucks because it was because he lived through that time too. And that's why he's the way he is. Like, it's no excuse for him to like hit my mom, hit me and my sister. But like now I know where a lot of it stems from, you know what I mean? And I can also see that he was trying to change too, you know? Even though he relapsed a lot, I could see that he was really trying, you know? So yeah, I have empathy, you know? I was developing empathy as I go, because I was still working on myself too. Yeah.
So I know. And now when you guys hang out, do you ever talk about it?
We do a little bit. But no, not that much anymore. But I did bring up like some of the stuff, because there was a lot of fucked up shit that happened, man. Like when they were at work, man, like they were too busy to take care of us. I remember they hired babysitters for us and stuff like that. But like, dude, those babysitters, like, me and my sister had some really bad experience with those babysitters. I remember like, one of the babysitters locked us downstairs and like, so she could have sex with her boyfriend and shit like that. And just fucking perverted fucking, you know, people and shit like that as a kid. So it was just like, yeah, it was a lot of bad shit, you know. But I did bring a lot of that stuff up to my dad, like in the future and stuff like that. But I understand them now. Like, they had to work. You know what I mean? Yeah. They couldn't just stay home and watch us, take care of us, and get to know us. They had to make money, you know? So they had to do what they had to do. Yeah.
But I often wonder about that today. Like, we hear that a lot with Vietnamese parents of that generation where they had to work.
Yeah.
But I'm like, thinking about that now, I'm like, one parent could have gone to work and made it all work.
Yeah, both my parents worked.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And you hear a lot about that. Like, both parents going to work. But then they wonder why their kids turn out like all angry and fucking, you know, all this shit. It's like, did both of them have to work? I question that a lot.
That's true. You know what? You got a good point. And America has so many benefits for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like government was helping a lot of the refugees and stuff like that too. You're right.
But is it because that we came from a lot of the people that like your dad and my dad came from a lap of luxury. They came from like high positions.
They
lost all that shit. And they're like, well, we got to like make all the money back.
You know what? You're right. That makes a lot of sense because my dad, he did have a lot when he was in Guangzhou, but everything got taken away, you know? And then he came to America with nothing.
So it's like one of those things. Well, you could have had a one income household and the mom would have, you know, stayed home or vice versa. The mom goes on work. The dad stays at home.
Yeah.
And raise a decent family because, you know, in the 80s, you know, money wasn't that high.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have a relationship with them growing up. It was more like I'm the servant, they're my master. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really know them. They were just like, it was just mainly my dad that was just like yelling all the time. Maybe because he came from like a military background too, you know?
For sure.
My mom was the nice one, thank God. I think the reason why I have a good heart is because my mom's super healing, you know?
Is she cool? You guys are really close to
her. Oh, yeah. She's a sweetheart, man. She doesn't snap or anything like that. But it's just sad because I watched her get walked on a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I watched her get hit and she just stayed with him. I watched her deal with a lot of his BS and she just never left his side.
And looking back, what do you think of that? Do you like, because we're Americans and we live in this world of like, oh, it's easy come, easy go. But do you see, and I'm not advocating for one way or another, I'm just wondering from your point of view, do you find merit in staying together after all these difficult years?
Okay, so man, this is a complicated, because I'm still kind of like going through it and learning it. Okay, for the longest time, I do believe my mom should have left him. Because no woman deserves to get hurt and walked on like that and disrespected like that. But in her mind at the time, she's scared that like, oh, well, if I don't stay with him, what if he doesn't take care of the kids? You know, what if he, you know? So, but she was scared of him, you know? Like, it got to the point where, like, they work in the same building, but they would take separate cars. She was scared to be in the same car as him. Like, he was really scary back then. But now that he's 80-something and he's recovering from leukemia and all that, recently, actually, She stuck by his side until now, and it got to the point where me and my sister were like, well, why are you stay with, you know, he's treated you like so bad, like your whole, you know, and like, but she's honestly the only reason why he has any like good in his heart at all. And if she wasn't there, he wouldn't be good at all. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like it, like, I don't know, man. It's a complicated thing.
It's
really showed me how someone can unconditionally love somebody. And I think because of that, and because I see it, and because I kind of learned to accept it after a while, instead of like holding a grudge and thinking my mom should resent my dad, I felt like because I learned that from her, it's made me forgive my dad more and also forgive, let go of things easier now and forgive people in general now and live a happier life.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. And I contemplate about this, you know, often is that all the difficult shit that we go through, you know, nobody deserves to be in these positions of like hurt and abuse. But oftentimes the offspring of like women, like my mom and your mom, dealing with men of power, and we get to see them through the long arc of staying with these men. We as children have learned a lot of perseverance, and it's actually benefited my life, you know, the fact that my mom sacrificed so much. And she always says that to me. She's like, you know, like I sacrificed so you and your brother could be, you know, my dad wasn't easy either. But then I look at your case too, and I'm like, well, that's sort of another example. And it leads us into the next part of our conversation is that because of all of those dark times that you experience, a lot of the funny ass shit in Supdoc comes out in ways that you're probably not even seeing. That the world net is now, you know, we're getting to enjoy that.
Oh yeah. Now that I look back on some of my old content, I'm like, this is because I think as a kid I was just trying to look at everything in a funny way. You know what I mean? My perspective was because I just, you know, I love laughing, I love like comedy, you know? And even like my sister's like that too. We all joke around with each other since we were kids. That was the outlet. And even when I was locked up in Mexico, so there was other Vietnamese kids that were in the program too. Actually, this is where NOC started forming. Actually, I just remembered right now. No, check it out. So there was another kid, a shout out to Jason Ma, one of the other Vietnamese kids that was in there with me. So we were both kind of similar. We're both the same age, and we both came from cities where we had older Vietnamese friends, you know? And then, so we were like, sup, doc? You know, because, you know, all my older homies, they all had a Vietnamese accent because a lot of them were born in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so when I saw Jason, we were both very Americanized, but we both came from that generation and had older friends. So every time we see each other, we'd always be like, sup, doc? You know, like back and forth all the time. So that's how it started actually in Mexico. Yeah, and then I remember, oh man, it's so funny. I remember when I got out and I was drinking with some of my older Vietnamese homies, and they all talk like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I got drunk and I kept saying like, sup, doc, you know? And then I remember my homie's like, hey man, stop saying doc, man, it's so annoying, man. I'm always trolling, you know, like fucking, I'm all, like, fuck, man, you know, they all fucking, even all my cousins talk like that. Yeah, shout out to my cousin Tiny. He's probably locked up somewhere doing nails or some shit. We don't get along no more because fucking he owes me money. But anyways, yeah, I used to troll him a lot too. He was like, man, what you try to say? I'm a fop. that's my cousin Tiny, bro.
So you're obviously good with Tiny.
No, I mean, if I saw him again, I'm like, I let everything go. But like, you know, typical Viet shit, man. He's like, hey, you my cousin, I love you, man. You take care of this for me, you know. And then like, he borrowed money from me for it and ghosted me for a little bit. He said he was gonna pay me to do something. Denver paid me. Typical scammer shit, bro. You know.
Yeah, so okay, so you get out and you're like hanging out with all these guys and you start busting these Vietnamese ways of speaking.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was around all that shit, like, and they were cool as fuck to me. They were like confident, crazy as hell, and into cool shit. That's how they took me to the street races. They took me to the pool halls, like the whole like Vietnamese American Viet culture in Chicago. Like, I was exposed to all that from hanging out with the guys. And then even when I came to California to visit my family, we'd be doing the same shit we were doing in Chicago, you know, when I hung out with Vietnamese people. We go to the PC cafe or whatever, go to a pool hall, you know.
And how often were you busting out these
accents?
These accents.
Honestly, I've been that way ever since I was little. Oh, you know, I was copying like uncles or like even my parents. And then, but when high school came around, it was more funny to copy them because I don't know, man, that accent's so like distinct because they're like, it's like kind of gangster, but it's kind of fobby. Yeah. And then I remember I had this one homie named Ricky. He's kind of fobby too, right? Born in Vietnam, but like he joined this black gang in Chicago. And I remember it was called Vice Lord, you know? But the way he pronounced it, it didn't sound like, he was like, oh, Vice Lord, you know? Like, it was just like, I hope he doesn't hear this podcast. You know, so it was like kind of like half pop, half like Ebonics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just always like, and there's a lot of homies like that too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. They grow up in the hood.
Like, man, I don't give a fuck, man. Like, you know, fuck that motherfucker up, man. You know, like, you know, so it just like, I absorbed all of that, you know, and then even when we go to a pool hall, like, you know, they all had the fucking long bangs, slick back hair, high fade, always smoking cigarettes. Yeah. And then that's when I got into like vocal trance and all that shit and just going to the bookstore and picking up Import Tuner, Super Street, and you know, just getting to that whole Asian scene and shit. Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun time when I got introduced to that whole culture, that subculture of Asians.
When in the history of this all did it become officially flying over the airwaves or the internet?
Oh, I mean, so I think it was like 2007 or 2008 or something like that, right?
Wait, 7 or 8 or 2007,
2008, right? So I always joke around like that with my friends. And then during that time, I was partying a lot and I was messing around with a lot of like prescription meds, whatever, during that time. And then on my digital camera, I was like, maybe I should make a troll video and post it on YouTube. But I wanted to pretend I was a fob Viet gangster, you know, but like pretend I was actually serious. And actually there was some comments that people thought I was actually being for real, but I just did that as a troll. Like, hey man, what's up, dog? Like, I go to my gangbang all day, dog. You know, that was just trolling, right? But then there was some people that actually thought it was for real. And then it started like getting numbers.
In 07?
Yeah, yeah. So on YouTube, it was getting numbers. And then
can we still find it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's there somewhere. Yeah. And then it started kind of going viral locally amongst like Chicago people. They're sharing it. But then I remember like during that time, my dad didn't know that I had a tattoos yet and stuff like that, you know? And then in the skit, I'm talking about, yeah, new ecstasy all day, whatever, you know? So during that time, my dad was using YouTube a lot because my dad sings. He was posting like singing videos. I was like, fuck, I don't, shit, this shit started getting a lot of views. I want my dad to see this shit. I fucking took it down.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah.
So, but is it, can we still find it?
I mean, yeah, it's
still up there.
It's SupDoc, actually. Okay. Yeah, right. It's still there.
But you don't show your face?
No, actually it's there, but I'm just disguised.
Okay.
I'm just disguised, but like goofy
so
disguised.
It started then in 07.
Yeah. But like outside of the internet, I've always been joking around like this. If you ask all my close friends, I've just been this way for like the longest time. Like, especially when I'm drunk, it always comes out. And then, what happened? I think later, like in the last 5 years or 6 years, I was like, man, you know, like I see all these other comedians blowing up or blah, blah, blah. And then I never thought of myself as a comedian ever. I just saw Joe and Bart Kwan doing I saw them from the beginning. And just then kidding, I was like, damn, these guys fucking like blew the fuck up, you know? And I'm just like, man, why can't I do it? You know, so I remember.
But they were at it like in 2010, 11. They were.
No, I think they were out at like, it was around the same time I posted that video. It was around that, or maybe even before that, right?
That, yeah.
So I used to watch all their shit all the time too, man. And I'm just like, man, I'm good at this shit too. And I'm Vietnamese, you know? And then, later on, like, I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, I created a separate Instagram account, SupDoc, and I was literally just like driving around saying like, oh man, blah, blah, blah. But I still didn't want people to know that I talk normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wanted people to think that I was an actual like Fob gangster dude, you know? Cause it was funny to me. Yeah, I was just trolling. I was literally just trolling. And then I didn't send the videos to any accounts during that time. I was just like, you know what? If this thing catches on fire, it catches on fire. If it takes off. And some people just started organically following me, you know? Cause I was using a lot of hashtags. And then during COVID, that's when I was like, you know what? Maybe I should let my pride down and start sending it to like bigger accounts. Like let's say Jackfruit, Asians Never Die, blah, blah, blah. But the only person that watched it from what I remember at that time was Jackfruit. And then it was just one of my videos where I'm just like, oh man, fucking, I don't know. I was just like talking random shit, you know? And then he's like, man, this shit's funny as hell, man. Like he reposted it. And that's when he was like, hey man, you should do a voiceover. And I was like, nah, I kind of want to stay in my element. I just want to do whatever I want to do. If this thing takes off, I just want it to be purely passion, purely fun. I don't want this to feel like it's work or whatever. And then that night was when I thought about it. And I was like, damn, but I would do a voiceover Family Guy. Because Family Guy has this one clip, and I would watch this clip every time I was fucked up.
Yeah.
That clip where Peter Griffin's like rolling, he's on ecstasy. He's like, oh man, fuck, you know? And I was like, but what if I do it with like a, turn him into like a Viet uncle, you know? So like, oh man, feel good or whatever, you know? Like one of those old OG Two Highs rolling at Avalon. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
in LA, man.
Yeah.
After hours, that shit was dark, man. You see some Two Highs in there.
Oh,
dark.
Like rolling on his mug, like 60 years old, right?
Dark, dark, dark place. Yeah.
So I found the clip. I remember I uploaded it to iMovie, and iMovie has this part where you can use the microphone to voice it over. And I remember I did it in the first shot, and then I started laughing at myself. I was like, man, this shit is so stupid. And then I just sent it to Jackfruit right away. I didn't add no music to it or anything. I didn't do any editing. I just voiced it over, like one shot.
Wow.
I sent it to Jackfruit. He started cracking up, and I didn't even post this on my page yet. He posted it on his page, and then he's like, oh, dude, this shit's blowing up right now. And everybody was sharing it. Everybody was sharing that video. And I think on Facebook, it reached 1 million people in 1 week. And that's when he's like, yo, you should do like a sequel. You should do another one. And I was like, fuck, yeah, I got, and this is during COVID. So I'm at home, I'm not doing anything. I was like, fuck, man. Yeah, fuck it, I'm gonna make another video. So I did. At first it was just joking with the accent, well, whatever, you know? But then I was like, oh, it would be even better if I like kind of put like all those things that I went through, like been around like Vietnamese culture into the skits. So I started putting like new wave freestyle and like that whole era from when I was 15, everything that I was exposed to. And then I kind of just kind of started putting my whole, my life into it, or people that I've been around into the skits. And I think that's what made it go viral, because it's all so relatable, you know, to Vietnamese Americans, my generation, or even a little bit older than me, you know?
Oh, definitely older than
you. Yeah.
Because that is, I'm the target demographic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the target demographic of all the things that you talk about. Like, I have guys that are a little bit older than me that send me the clips.
Yeah, and I was like the youngest guy hanging out with my older cousins, you know what I'm saying? Like, they exposed me to all that shit, you know?
But let me ask you something real quick. You are at the very tail end. You're very young when you were experiencing all that. And then at the higher end of that is maybe the 55-year-old guys. But let me ask you this. So you cover this big expanse, but from where you are to like down younger, do you ever think that you're going to create a subdoc or a alter ego sort of like subdoc for the younger generation? Do you see it?
The thing is, I'm in my 30s and I'm still very involved with the present day because I still go out a lot. So I know the culture right now too. You know, I still hang out with people. Some of my friends are in the early 20s, mid 20s. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Do you see something there? Like you see it with the subdoc crew?
Yeah, I see a
demographic.
Yeah. So, you know, the doc generation, I call that doc generation, the people going to pull out, there was that generation, but now they got this younger version called the Kevin Nguyen, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like there's like a whole another typical Asian of this generation, and the girls too, you know? So.
And what's the difference between the two of them?
I feel like the younger one, like a lot of them are in frats, and a lot of them vape, you know, like it's just like... a lot of them listen to Lenium, Slander, stuff like that. Like they're all kind of like into the same shit. You know what I mean? But it's not really like my generation where it was just like everybody was trying to gangbang too or join crews during that time. I feel like there's less of that now. There's still that in the younger generation. I know there is, but there's a lot more of like the party Vietnamese Kevin Nguyen guy who's like a player, loves going to raves, loves ABGs. You know what I'm saying? Like shit like that. Yeah.
But it seems like the subdoc stuff, you've captured it really well, because the richness of the mimicry is just, it's just rich, really deep.
Hey man, it's just, cause I lived through it. I've been in all the Wang Yao, I've been in all the, you know, coffee shops too, you know, like I karaoke, like the songs, the music, everything, like being around listening to my older cousins fucking listen to Timmy T, like fucking freestyle Raquel, Stevie B, you know what I mean? And just hearing all that, and also because I'm really into music, so I would download all that old stuff too. Yeah.
How has this all changed your life?
The whole subdoc thing.
Subdoc thing, yeah.
Fuck yeah, it's changed a lot, man. Like, right before COVID started, I was fucking replacing iPhone screens, man. I was working for this company called Pulse, and it was kind of like Uber. And I was going around just getting dispatched to people's houses, replacing iPhone screens and making like 35, 40 bucks per. I thought it was not bad at the time. And then I would take their old screens and go sell them at phone shops to make a little extra. I was doing that, you know? So it's crazy how like my life changed. Yeah, I've done so many different types of hustles, but that was like the most previous one before COVID. And I was trying to like sell these hydration backpacks too. Like I tried to innovate. I was trying to create something and do something where I was still an entrepreneur, you know? I never wanted to work for anybody because I told you before, like my first job ever was a waiter. How old was I? It was right when I got out of Mexico. And I remember pouring water for the lady and then she didn't even look at me. She didn't say thank you. And that's when I realized like, fuck, I can never work for nobody and do this type of work ever. Like I feel like a bitch, you know? Yeah. So I've always wanted to find jobs where I could just set my own schedule or do my own thing. But I didn't start making money until the birthday shout-outs.
And how did that come about?
I did it for free, actually, because somebody was like, hey, you do birthday shout-outs? And I was like, oh, yeah, I do. So I was like, yeah, send me some pictures of your friend. And I had all this time during COVID. I was like, yeah, send me some pictures of your friend, and then I'll do something. So I was like, oh, no man, stay with him, happy birthday, whatever, you know? Hope you have a lot of sex. You know? So I did that. It went from like me doing like 5 free ones a day, and then so many people were asking me. I was like, hey, you know, I'm doing so many things. Can you guys at least like donate me some money? Tip me. I didn't even ask for a certain price. So next thing you know, my Venmo started blowing up with 20 bucks, 20 bucks, 20 bucks, 20 bucks. And then I started charging because then people were like, oh, how much do you charge? And I was like, 20 bucks. Then it went from 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 60. And I remember, fuck, during those 2 years, I was doing like 10 of them a day. And you know, this is during COVID. I wasn't leaving the house because I stayed with my parents during the time because they're elderly mm-hmm. and I didn't want to get them sick. I don't want to take any risks. So I was just stacking up. And on top of that, I was getting EDD too. And then I invested that money. And then I got into tax deed sales, which is real estate investing, and bought some cheap houses in Yakima, Washington. One cheap house in Yakima, Washington that was affordable. Did my first flip, you know, and then kept going with that. And then as I continue to grow SupDoc and create more funny content, and this is all stuff that I love posting too, you know, I enjoy this a lot. Then people start asking me to do ads. People start sending me products, and I start doing reviews on them, you know. And then next thing you know, I get my first retainer deal, you know, and then I get paid monthly from you know, specific companies now. And now I'm where I'm at right now. And during along the way, so many people started following me that I was like really shocked that started following. I just started meeting all these like people that I felt were so famous in the Asian space or celebrities or whatever, you know, at that time. Yeah, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
And I'm still meeting more people like what's his name, Kimchi from Kim's Convenience Store. I didn't know he was Vietnamese. Kimchi, he started following me too. His name's Andrew, I think, Fung, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fung. He's been in the podcast too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
In Canada, yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy how, like, man, all these people started following me.
Man, it's the craziest shit because you didn't plan on doing any of this shit.
Nah, man. Like,
nothing.
That's when I go back and say, like, it was always in me. Like, the humor side of me, it was just always there, you know? And if I just, like, focused on the energy and went with something that I was just passionate about and try to find a way to, like, monetize it, I think, yeah.
But, man, I mean, I think about your business management degree. That has to have a play in all of this shit, right?
Nah. Honestly, I didn't learn shit from that. I learned shit from other shit. I didn't learn it from that. I learned that from being the outside. I learned it from, you know, just all the jobs I had, you know? So, like,
now you go back to Vietnam quite a bit. How does that, like, affect, you know, it's not that I'm wondering how it affects your parents, but, you know, because they come from an old school, but you're, like, spending a lot of time in Vietnam.
Man, I love it over there.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you want me to start about it? Like,
when you started going back a lot, you know, what did your mom and dad think at the time?
They didn't think too much about it. Sometimes my mom would say like say some things like, oh, why are you going back there? You know, oh, my mom's so funny, man. She was like, you know, my friend, she just ate fresh coconut and then she ended up in the hospital. Now she was in wheelchair for a few hours or something. I'm like, okay, man, I won't eat any coconuts. That's how I responded. She was just trying to, like, scare me about all these, like rare random situations shit, yeah. That happen and shit.
But they're cool with it, right?
Yeah, they're cool with it. Yeah.
And then, so now, when you find yourself, like, spending so much time in Vietnam, like, you've mentioned that you would create a life in Vietnam had it not been for your mom and dad living here in, you know, in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would move there permanently. I love it that much over there. But my pops is... He had leukemia last year,
yeah.
And he was going through chemo. I just want to make sure I still want to live my life, but that's why I come home every month so that I can stay for a month so I could spend enough time with my mom and dad.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So you go for what, 2-3 months?
I'll go for like a month, month and a half, but then I'll come back and I'll stay for like a month and so I can spend more time with my mom and dad.
Is there more opportunity for you in Vietnam business-wise?
Right now, it's just the nightlife stuff. So I'm just booking tables for nightlife over there. That's probably the only opportunity over there that I see I'm able to monetize off of over there. And also being in Vietnam and showing the places I'm eating at, stuff like that. So people in America see how Vietnam is now. Yeah. So that's like, because I'm doing content too, you know, but also making money here too whenever I come back, you know what I'm saying, with the ads and stuff like that for companies here. Yeah.
Yeah. Will you ever shift into, let's say, the comedy gear where you're stand-up comedy like Stephen Ho or Linda Dong?
Nah,
or,
you know? I don't see myself doing that. Like, my humor comes from me not scripting anything. My humor comes from me being in a good mood.
Wait a minute. You don't script any of that?
No, I don't script anything.
You look at I wing it.
I think of the idea in my head and then I wing it. My recipe is I got to be in a silly mood though. So that's why sometimes I'll take a little bit of shrooms to get myself a little more silly. But I don't write anything down. I feel like it's not going to be funny if I do that, you know? So if I don't like it the first shot, I'll wing it again the second shot or the third shot. Yeah, but I'll just have the idea in my mind of how I want to do it. But I don't write anything down. I don't do anything.
You don't prep?
No, I don't do anything.
So you're just waiting for it to come?
Yeah, I wait for it. Yeah. And then I just got to be in a good mood. So as long as I keep working out, I get enough sleep, you know, like meditate a little bit. That usually keeps my mood well. I just, I the what all this power comes from, or whatever, all the creativity is from me being in a good mood. Yeah. I noticed that I do have more creativity when I'm sober more, because I'd be partying a lot. But yeah, I mean, that's just what I noticed about that.
So interesting.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would never have expected that answer, right? Yeah. Because yeah. I'm thinking, like, you're some studious guy. You fucking got discipline. You write all your shit out.
No, I don't get write it all planned. No, I just got to be in a silly mood, man.
And then how many times do you have to watch that clip?
Not much. Sometimes I'll chop the clip down with other clips to put together the story. Yeah, to do it. But most of the time when I do these cartoons, I'm not spending more than an hour on it. You know, usually average like 30 minutes to add the music and add everything. My thing is, if I don't laugh at it, I'm not going to post it. But if I laugh at it, I'm going to post it. Sometimes some of my videos don't do that well because it's just funny to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I realized that as long as I stay true to myself and do what I think is funny and not just what I don't want to, as long as I don't get too focused on like the likes, the comments and what other people think, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
Because I still want to be happy, you know, and I'm sharing my happiness and my humor with everybody. And if they don't get it, yep. Well, hopefully they get it later.
Exactly, you know? Or somebody yeah. else will get it. And, yeah. and that's how I feel about all the guests that I invite. It's yeah. like some people are like super popular and famous and big numbers.
Yeah.
And then some people I just happen to like, you know, yeah. like the superintendent of Garden Grove. You know, mm-hmm. I find those people so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if these are people that nobody knows, but like I'm interested in, yeah. I'm going for it. I don't hold back.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the only formula.
Yeah, I just want to have fun, man. And so most of the time when I'm doing this shit, I'm like, oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
You know? And how many do you do, like, what's the percentage of, like, the ones you do versus the one you don't air?
No, usually every time I pick one, I always air it. Like, I have to really like it, though, you know? But sometimes, there's been a few times where I post, I'm like, why did I post this? This is just kind of whack, you know? And then
you take it down?
Yeah. Sometimes, but I rarely do that. I rarely do that. Most of the time, I'm posting everything and leaving it there. Because I always have to tell myself, I was like, I think it's funny. I'm going to leave it here. You
yeah.
know? I don't want to get too focused on the followers and the engagement too much, you know? Because I noticed that a lot of my videos that did well was because I was in a really good mood. Oh, and that's wow. where all the humor comes from. And the only time I'm in a funny mood is when I'm in a good mood. You know what I mean?
In a healthy mood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good sleep.
When I'm joking around with my friends, it's because I'm in a great mood. Yeah.
I mean, you can argue too. It's like when we're in a good state, the synapses in our neurons are they're all firing, right?
Yeah.
And when you make that many connections in your brain and it's just like going, one thing leads to another, you could fucking be funny. You could throw out that shit and just dish it out and be funny.
Yeah.
But if you're not in that space, you kind of... It slows you down.
Yeah, yeah. So my formula is like, sometimes I feel like, oh, fuck, I haven't posted in a while. But I was like, but shit, I'm not in the mood right now. I'm not going to do it just because I'm not, just because I have to. You know, I got to stay true to myself. I don't want to become a slave to the people. You know what I mean? I want to be able to live a free life and do what makes me happy. And so far, I feel like this is the formula that's gotten me here. Yeah, it's all organic, bro. You know, I've never paid for followers or any of that shit, you know? I rarely use hashtags too, you know? Kind of just people, if they really share like it, they'll share it.
You share.
Yeah, and I'm happy that everybody's been sharing it. Like they fuck with my humor, mm-hmm. you know? They get it. Yeah, which is cool.
Where do you see yourself, you know, in the next year, 5 years?
Honestly, whenever I get asked this question, bro, I always just say I'm alive, because this has a lot to do with, another thing that I've gone through, I lost a lot of really close friends to drug overdoses, and I had a lot of friends where they saved up money and then they wanted to travel and do all these things and then they died and then they didn't get to even experience that. So it's like in my mind I'm like, how you have all this money saved up and then you can't live it out, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm traveling so much right now, because I can, because I don't know how long this is going to last either. It might last forever, it might not last, but because I can do it, I'm going to do it, you know? And I'm gonna do it not just for me, I'm gonna do it for them too, because they didn't get to live it out. So I'm kind of trying to live out what my friends couldn't live out. And I don't know what might happen to me, because the accidents happen all the time. People die or whatever. I just wanna be happy, alive, and hopefully everybody I love around me is happy and alive too. And I can help everybody around me, you know? That's it. That's really it.
That's a very sweet thought. I like that a lot. That's you living in the present moment, and that's very hard to do.
Yeah, I am.
What kind of fun? What kind of things do you like to do in Vietnam? What makes it so enticing for you?
Saving money.
Really?
I mean, sorry, not saving money. So saving money compared to here.
Right.
Having that dollar stretch a long ass way by eating all these foods and not costing that much. You know what I'm saying? And then also just, it's such a like chill lifestyle over there. I just enjoy being outside, sitting outside, drinking coffee. Yeah. People are like, so, what are you doing in Vietnam right now? They're thinking I'm going to say something with like, I'm like, just drinking coffee, eating, getting a massage. I'm just chilling, bro. I was like, oh yeah, I booked tables too. But
what do you mean by that? You booked tables?
Oh yeah, no, because I work with the nightlife over there, and then I book sofas and tables for people who want to get bottle service there. I mean, so I make a percentage too.
But yeah, but why you? Like, you got friends, that many fucking friends calling you up when you're in Vietnam?
I mean, because a lot of my audience is VQ, you know? Yeah. And they're always traveling to Vietnam, so it's like, might as well find a way to monetize
off of it. So they DM you?
Yeah, they just DM me. And then, you know, I just take their name down, book it for them. You know, might as well take advantage of, you know,
everybody's following me.
And also, that I get to help them get experience, like, everything that I think is fun over there,
too. But do you hang out with them?
No, not all of them, no. But, yeah, because I'm not there right now, too. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you're
there... I'll pop out. Yeah, I'll pop out. Yeah.
Dude, that must be a big treat for them to finally meet you, right? Yeah,
and it's crazy because the clubs that I work with over there, they got this big old fucking duck logo.
I see that, man.
At first, they were only bringing it out when I'm there, but now they're just bringing it out for every fucking table I book. So it's kind of a treat for them, too, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
That is fascinating, man. The culture, how it travels from here... back there, and just like this sort of back and forth that we have. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, man. I like, and honestly, being in Vietnam that long kind of helped me understand why my parents are the way they are too, and the way they think too. And then it's just an easier life out there. If you can find a way to make US money and work remotely, like that life is so much better out there.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you save a lot too.
Yeah, man, because I could get like two cơm gà, like Hainan, for like less than $3 delivered, you know? Like, what the fuck? You know, I'm gonna spend $15 on that shit here. Like, your money stretches a long way out there, man. So that's why. And then, like, I love working out over there, too. There's this one gym I go to called Primal, and they have a lot of different classes you could take, like Muay Thai, yoga, boxing, all that. And then, like, strength?
It's fucking crazy because... I remember a year ago, I was trying to like explain everybody all the time how modern Vietnam is.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah. How cool it's gotten so modern.
But it's like for you to sit here and tell me, yeah, I like this one gym because they give this like all these classes. It's like no different than LA.
No, everything that I do here, I do it over there. There's nothing over there that it's missing from over here.
Nothing.
No, nothing.
In fact, there's more shit.
There's more shit, I think. And they're more efficient over there.
Yeah, it's much more efficient. Yeah. And then if you want to just pick up and go to Thailand...
That's what I'm saying. It's right there. And then going to Japan is pretty cheap too. Round
trip.
Super
cheap.
Yeah, from Vietnam.
Everything is around there. Hong Kong, fucking Philippines. You do all of that. Korea.
Yep.
It's the craziest shit. It's like, and then, you know, I said, a year ago, I was like trying to explain to everybody like, oh, this is the way it should be. And then, but now it's just like, it's a given now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I'm posting so much when I'm over there, because I want to share this with everybody to see how dope it is over there now. Yeah, it's way different from when I went when I was a kid, and then way different from even 2017. Shit.
Well, dude, man, I really appreciate you opening your doors up for me to come in today and sitting and you sharing this stuff with me. And hopefully, you know, like in a few months, a year from now, we sit back down and we just shoot the shit, maybe bring in Chris Tran.
I'm down, bro.
All these other fools to shoot the shit.
Yeah, I'm down. This was good. Yeah, I'm glad I got to share that.
Yeah, you know, I was nervous as hell sitting down with you.
I was nervous too in the beginning too. I was like, okay, I'm gonna talk about more personal shit this time. I can't just joke around, you know?
Yeah. But I'm glad we got to really experience this conversation. Bro. Thanks a lot, brother. Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. At The Vietnamese Podcast.